The story you are about to hear is true.
Attention! All true...
She's alive! Alive!
Welcome to the Retroist.
Going to see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom was a very different experience than seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark. When I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, I went and saw it with my family. Actually, both times that I saw it with my family. But when Temple of Doom came out, it was highly anticipated. My friends and I were very aware that this film was coming out, and we were very excited for it. This was the height of Indiana Jones mania amongst my friends and I. Theirs would peak here, and then they would lose interest pretty quickly. But just like with them, this is when I was at my highest point of fandom. We read and discussed everything we could about Temple of Doom, and when it finally opened, we were ready to go see it. My friend's father offered to drive us to the movie theater. We all climbed into the back of his truck, talking about Temple of Doom on the way there. We got to the theater and it was packed. But we didn't care, we had gotten there early enough that we all got seats together, and when the film started rolling, we were in heaven. After the film, we talked about the movie nonstop for months afterwards and reenacted scenes from it. I had one friend who had a lot of Indiana Jones toys, so we were playing Indiana Jones there. The big thing that was different here was that my family still hadn't seen Temple of Doom. While Raiders was a big deal and everyone wanted to see it, I would have been the big driver for them to see Temple of Doom, so they didn't see it. And I couldn't talk about it with them until eventually they would see it on home video. It was a clear indication, even at the time for me, that something had changed. The world was starting to open up to me, and I was doing more things without my family more often. It was exciting to see Temple of Doom with my friends. We had a lot of fun, but I definitely felt that there was something missing from my Raiders experience, and it was my family. It's funny how we evolve in so many ways, and where we can see those milestones in our lives. Sometimes it's passing a driver's test, or graduating from a school, but other times it's just going to see a movie with your friends and not your family, and then becoming aware that that happened. On today's show, we are going to talk about Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which I will probably just call Temple of Doom moving forward. We'll talk about the people in front of and behind the camera, we'll talk about the music, the production, the advertising, and we'll throw in a few surprises here and there. We have an info-packed episode ahead of us, so without further ado, let's start the show. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is a 1984 adventure film. It was directed by Steven Spielberg. It's based on a story by George Lucas, and the script was written by Willard Hike and Gloria Katz. It is the second film in the Indiana Jones original trilogy and a prequel to the film that preceded it, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm going to start by reading the box of the VHS. All the Indiana Jones movies were a big deal when they came out on VHS. This is the 1986 Paramount home video release, I believe the original release. Great cover. It has Indy and his love interest in this film, Willie, on the back. Harrison Ford shirtless, but still wearing the fedora. Has the great Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom logo. From this point moving forward, all of the films would be Indiana Jones and the. So Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. They would go back and change Raiders of the Lost Ark eventually to Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Which I guess makes sense, but I still generally call these movies Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, Last Crusade. I just call them by that because that is how I grew up. So let's get to the box. Indiana Jones, the daredevil archaeologist who saved mankind in Raiders of the Lost Ark, is back in one of the biggest box office smashes in history. This time, Indy's out to find the famous Sankara Stones and to save hundreds of children who've been enslaved by a mysterious cult in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It's an action-packed masterpiece of special effects and edge-of-your-seat adventure. Harrison Ford leads an incredible cast in this breathtaking epic shot on three continents by the film's creators George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. Really want to get George Lucas's name in there, although Steven Spielberg did the direction. That does cover the idea of the film, but doesn't really get into the plot. Put that down. It starts in 1935, so years before Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Indy is in Shanghai. He gets into some shenanigans with some gangsters there. We are introduced to Willie Scott, who is a performer who will depart with him, and his sidekick Short Round, who's a young kid who really helps Indy escape. They are trying to get away from the gangsters. They get on a plane. The plane's pilot is going to crash the plane and jumps out with his parachute. So Indy, Willie, and Short Round have to climb into an inflatable raft that they use as a sort of parachute, and then as a tube to ski down the mountain with, and they wind up in an Indian village. There the villagers ask Indy to help them retrieve these stolen stones, and also the children who have been stolen from the village that are operating in the nearby Pencott Palace. Indy says okay, saying that these stones are probably these mysterious Sankara stones. And you know how Indy loves to find stuff. They journey to the palace. Things are not all they seem. They meet some bad people. There's a cult operating that is abducting the children and using them to dig. That thuggy cult is led by their high priest Mola Ram. There's lots of great set pieces, insects, a collapsing ceiling, a minecart chase, a great bridge scene, human sacrifice, lots of humor. At the end, Indy is victorious, returning the children and the stones. A happy ending, as you might expect from an Indiana Jones film. The story for this film, and of course the idea for the film, came from George Lucas. George Lucas is a legendary filmmaker, most remembered for Star Wars and creating Indiana Jones, although he is a powerhouse in movies, starting with THX 1138, moving on to American Graffiti, and eventually Star Wars. He would found Industrial Light and Magic and Lucasfilm, two big players in Hollywood, part of that now owned by Disney. Still pretty well respected. Now mostly a philanthropist, he is still a legend in most circles. Now he would come up with the story for this, but they would bring in two writers to work on the film, a husband and wife duo, Gloria Katz and Willard Hike. Gloria Katz was born in 1942. She passed away in 2018. Film producer and screenwriter, worked closely with George Lucas on his screenplays for American Graffiti, Temple of Doom, and Howard the Duck. She also did script doctor work, uncredited, on the Star Wars movies. And according to many sources, it is this husband and wife duo that brought a lot of the humor and character development to Princess Leia in the film. Her husband, Willard Hike, was born in 1945. He's currently retired, also known mostly for his association with George Lucas, met Lucas while they were students at USC, and would join Lucas and Coppola in their filmmaking endeavors. He would work on the same movies that Gloria worked on, but he also directed four films that he co-wrote with Katz: Messiah of Evil, Best Defense, French Postcards, and of course Howard the Duck, which unfortunately was panned, even though it is delightful. They also made some television films like A Father's Homecoming and American River. The film was directed by the same person who directed Raiders of the Lost Ark and many other of my childhood favorite films, Steven Spielberg. Steven Allen Spielberg was born in 1946, producer, director, screenwriter. He's a big player in post-1960s Hollywood, has won many awards over the years, not just in Hollywood, but across the globe. He was born in Ohio, grew up in Arizona, and then moved to California to study film. There, he would start working on television, working on shows like Columbo and Night Gallery, and then would direct the television film Duel. That would lead to his theatrical film debut, Sugarland Express, which a lot of people forget about. But that's because the next film he made was the 1975 blockbuster Jaws. That would be followed up with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, E.T. the Extraterrestrial, the Indiana Jones trilogy, Jurassic Park, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan. The list goes on. Along the way, he would found a movie studio and serve as a producer on a lot of legendary films and television shows as well. Are you a fan of the Retroist podcast? Do you like more retro stuff? Why not check out the Retroist Patreon? Go to patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, access to the Retroist Discord, and more. Feel good about yourself and make a difference in the world. Support the Retroist. When the production of Raiders of the Lost Ark first started, Spielberg said that he remembered George telling him that if he directed one movie, he was going to have to direct three of these Indiana Jones films, because he had three stories in mind. As they moved into the story of what Temple of Doom would be, Lucas has said that he thought it should be darker, because he had learned that the second film in the trilogy should be dark, like Empire Strikes Back in the Star Wars trilogy. Plus, they wanted the film to be different. Spielberg is quoted as saying, "The danger in making a sequel is that you can never satisfy everyone. If you give people the same movie with different scenes, they say you weren't more original. But if you give them the same character in another fantastic adventure, but with a different tone, you risk disappointing the other half of the audience who just wanted a carbon copy of the first film with a different girl and a different bad guy. So you win and you lose both ways, but the former choice allows you to be more creative, and that is exactly what they decided." Spielberg originally wanted to bring Marion Ravenwood, the love interest played by Karen Allen in the first film, back. Sadly, that didn't happen. I guess they would have had to have a younger Karen Allen in that role, and then maybe even have Abner Ravenwood, her father, in the movie as well. But they stepped away from that. Like you might expect after what you saw in Raiders of the Lost Ark with a lot of its great set pieces, they kicked around a whole bunch of ideas. They had had an idea that they would do something in China. They wanted to have the Great Wall featured, maybe a Lost World, the Monkey King. Ultimately, they would decide to go a different route. It was Lucas who came up with the idea to have a religious cult that was focused on child slavery and ritual human sacrifice. One of the more interesting ideas that they tried that didn't go anywhere was for a haunted castle in Scotland to be part of the film. But Spielberg said no, because he thought it seemed too similar to Poltergeist. Ultimately, they decided that the setting would be this temple in India with these bad guys. Now, Lawrence Kasdan, who had written the original Raiders of the Lost Ark script, was asked to write Temple of Doom. He heard the story, and he didn't like it. He thought it was very mean and dark. He is quoted as saying it is ugly and mean-spirited. So Lucas hired Gloria Katz and Willard Hike to write the script. According to what I read, they were hired because not only were they talented, but they also had some knowledge of Indian culture, and they were told to use the film Gunga Din as an influence for the film. I was really on board with that. As a kid, I grew up watching Gunga Din at least once a year, and it was one of the main reasons I was pretty excited for Temple of Doom when it came out. They would spend a couple of days at Skywalker Ranch working with Spielberg and Lucas on the story. From that, they had two directions they had to go with. One, that the film would be about a village in India where something had been stolen and that Indy had to recover it. And that the second idea is that the film would start in China and then move to India. My favorite quote from this is from Hike, who said that Lucas was very single-minded about getting through meetings, while Steve would always stop and think about visual stuff. That sounds about right. In the original draft, there would have been a motorcycle chase across the Great Wall of China. Unfortunately, the Chinese government didn't think that was a good idea and wouldn't grant permission to film there. I would think that they could make a set of the Great Wall of China, but maybe they couldn't. Lucas's Alaskan Malamute was named Indiana, and that is where we get the name Indiana Jones. Two new characters introduced in this film, Willie and Short Round, come from the names of Spielberg and Hike's dog, respectively. A 20-page treatment was delivered in May of 82, titled Indiana Jones and the Temple of Death. While I like the name Temple of Doom, Temple of Death is very evocative. Now, they would borrow things from the original Raiders of the Lost Ark film. They realized they might have a bigger budget, so things that were cut from the original film that they still wanted to see, they would put into Temple of Doom. This includes the famous raft as a parachute scene, and I like that Lawrence Kasdan cut it from the original because he said it was too unbelievable, which is what a lot of people said about the scene in this film when it came out. They needed to have a lot of exposition to explain the Temple of Doom and the thuggy cult and all of these things. They came up with this idea that this information would be explained during a dinner scene that would be this gross-out dinner scene. This is a controversial scene in a lot of ways, because the people in India, when they saw this, and they are shown eating bugs and monkey brains and all of these things, were offended. What I've read, well, besides the fact that it's gross out for gross out humor's sake, which went over really big with my friends and I back in the day, is that there was supposed to be this sort of meta humor about this scene, the idea that they are serving this food to people not from India, thinking that these exotic dishes are what they would expect to be served, even though there is nothing like this being served in India. I read that. I don't know if I buy it. Feel sort of revisionist. Still, it's interesting. The first draft was written in 6 weeks and was delivered in August of 1982. Spielberg had directed E.T., which was an immense hit, and George Lucas did not want him to get distracted, so he wanted to get this film in production soon. So they rushed, and a second draft was finished by September of that year. Both writers were working simultaneously on rewrites for a final shooting draft from March to April of 83. A lot of great stuff would get into this film, although some would be cut, and we would see some of it, like a biplane chase scene that was cut for budget reasons, appear in the third film, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Harrison Ford would come back to play the role of Indiana Jones. He had signed on to do 3 films. Now they needed to find his love interest in the film. They supposedly auditioned more than 1,000 actors for the role of Willie Scott. It seems like everyone in Hollywood might have come out for this role, including the then unknown Sharon Stone, who's talked about coming out for this role a couple of times, and she probably would have been pretty good in it. Kate Capshaw, who would get the role of Willie, sent in a videotape audition. Spielberg really liked it, and he showed it to Harrison Ford, who thought it was good. So they had their Willie Scott. Then they needed to find their short round. So they had an open audition in major cities. Ki-Hui Kwan, who would eventually get the role, had actually shown up with his younger brother and tagged along. And they noticed Kwan giving his brother advice on what to do and thought, hey, would you like to audition? They gave him a shot, and he nailed it and got the role. The film would be shot in Sri Lanka, so a lot of the extras, like the villagers, were all Sri Lankan actors, and the main characters that you saw in the Pangkok Palace would be played by Indian actors. So they went to India to cast actors, smartly not going a route that a lot of people were going at the time, where they would cast Western actors and darken their skin to look Indian.
Steven Spielberg.
Santiago!
George Lucas. And four. If adventure has a name, it must be Indiana Jones. Harrison Ford in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Rated PG.
Coming soon to these theaters. Check local listings for details.
So, of course, Harrison Ford was back as archaeology professor and adventurer Indiana Jones. While Ford had been working for years, he got his big break in 1977, playing that rogue Han Solo in Star Wars. He would follow that up with other Star Wars films, and then become an even bigger star when he starred in Raiders of the Lost Ark and would play the character in 4 other films over the next few decades. But he did a lot of other great films in the meantime, including The Fugitive, Air Force One, Blade Runner, and many others. Kate Capshaw played Wilhelmina Willie Scott, the nightclub singer who's working in Shanghai in Club Obi-Wan, a great nod to Star Wars. She is not an adventurer, and over the course of the film becomes Indy's love interest. She would also become Steven Spielberg's love interest, because she is Kathleen Sue Spielberg now. Although retired now, she still went by Kate Capshaw. Her big break was as Willie Scott in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, but she would work in films like Space Camp, Black Rain, and Dreamscape, amongst many others. She's also a talented painter, and her work is in the Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery. Ki-Hui Kwan played Short Round, Indy's child sidekick. Born in 1971, he is also sometimes known as Jonathan Ki Kwan. He got his big break in Temple of Doom, would follow it up with the 1985 film Goonies, and then would have a couple of other roles before taking a very long acting hiatus, instead doing a lot of stunt choreography and doing assistant director work. He would return to acting in 2021 and then have his big break in the film Everything Everywhere All at Once. This has jump-started his career and given him a Best Supporting Actor award. And I found him to be a delight, maybe the best thing in the second season of the Disney Plus series Loki, which came out in 2023. So hopefully we'll just keep seeing more of him. Amrish Puri played Mola Ram, a thuggy priest. Should mention the thuggy. I don't know a lot about them, but I kind of believe that they are fictional. I've read some stuff that say they're not. I've read some stuff that say they are. Seemed like sensationalism, no matter how you slice it. But the story goes that they're a strangulation cult. They would strangle people on roads. And in this film, they are blown up to be comic book character evil. They took elements of devil worship and human sacrifice and combined them into this cult run by Mola Ram. Amrish Puri was born in 1932. He passed away in 2005. A extremely prolific actor with more than 450 films. Although, for U.S. audiences, they're going to know him for his work in Temple of Doom. But he was also in the 1982 film Gandhi. Roshan Seth played Chatterlal, the prime minister of the Maharaja of Pangkat, who is also a secret thuggy worshipper in the film. Roshan Seth is a British Indian actor born in 1942, began working in the UK, then the US, and then India. He would move to India after starting acting to become a journalist, but then would get a role playing Nehru in Richard Attenborough's Gandhi, which would bring him a BAFTA award for Best Supporting Actor, which ignited his interest in acting again. And he would work in a lot of television shows and movies, including Passage to India, Mississippi Masala, and Street Fighter the Movie. Philip Stone played Captain Philip Blumberg. He is the military man who comes to the rescue in the film. I wanted to mention Philip Stone. He was born in 1924, passed away in 2003. He had a lot of interesting roles over the years, but he was Delbert Grady in The Shining and Alex DeLarge in A Clockwork Orange. Two very interesting roles to have. There's lots of other characters in the film and some great cameos from people like Dan Aykroyd, Steven Spielberg, George Lucas, etc.
Tuesday, join in the adventures of Indiana Jones and Short Round as they lead the greatest heroes and sidekicks in movie and television history.
There's a kid driving the car!
Classic chases, daring rescues, and comic odd couples. Heroes and sidekicks, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom Tuesday.
They had finished the script and were ready to roll, and they sent the script to the authorities in India because they wanted to film in North India, and they were told, no way, this script is offensive and they want to change stuff. They had this great palace they wanted to film in, but the Indian government wanted to be able to edit this. They didn't want to portray India in the way that they were being portrayed in the film. It's especially the Mola Ram stuff that really bothered them. They wanted them to remove specific language, specific characters, and have final cut privileges, which wasn't going to happen. So instead, they shot the film in Sri Lanka, and the places they would have used as backgrounds instead became matte paintings and models. With all of the changes, the film would have a bigger budget than Raiders of the Lost Ark. They would get $28.17 million, which is eight more than Raiders. Filming began in Sri Lanka on April 18th, 1983, and then would move to Elstree Studios in England on May 5th. There are a lot of bugs in this film, in particular one scene, and from what I read, they had so many that at the end of the day, crew members would leave, and then when they'd get home, they'd find these bugs crawling on them still, which does not seem pleasant. In fact, I heard that a lot of the bugs would show up on the set where they were doing all the dance numbers, and I imagine a lot of bugs were getting stomped that day. The opening musical number was choreographed by Danny Daniels. It's a big deal because it's a great musical number. Very Busby Berkeley, very old Hollywood, set to the song Anything Goes. And Kate Capshaw learned to sing it in Mandarin and took tap dance lessons. There was some injuries during filming, specifically Harrison Ford, who had a spinal disc herniation while filming a scene where he's fighting an assassin. And so they brought a hospital bed so that Harrison Ford could lay down. Unfortunately, it was too much. Ford, who said he was in the best shape of his life and said this is why he was able to get better so quickly, had to go to a hospital. And so he was flown to a hospital on June 21st for recovery, and they started doing 5 weeks of shooting with stunt doubles and stand-ins, trying to get anything they could to not waste time. They did pickup shots for exteriors in lots of other locations, including the Snake River Canyon in Idaho, the American River in Yosemite National Park, and the San Joaquin Valley. They would also go to Florida to shoot alligators. We see crocodiles in the movie, but they are actually alligators that were working as crocodiles. the mine chase scene, which blew my mind as a kid, was done with a combination of scale models and dolls, plus a roller coaster. Just amazing stuff. They would also use some stop motion in that sequence. This meant that the crew at Industrial Light and Magic would come in to do some work. And for those scenes, they would actually record roller coaster sounds from Disneyland for the minecart scenes. When the first edit of the film was done, Spielberg showed it to Lucas, and they both agreed the film went too fast, that they had put their foot on the gas pedal, and the film just moved too quickly, and ultimately they decided they needed to slow it down. So they actually made the film longer than they originally planned to do. Now, we are all familiar with Raiders of the Lost Ark and the music from that film. It was done by John Williams, and they would bring John Williams back to work on Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And the film has a wonderful soundtrack, just like Raiders. The music was composed and conducted by Williams and was released on LP, cassette, and CD in 1984, and would then get a reissue on CD in 2008. And that 2008 release is great because there is music from the movie that couldn't go into the original LP because there are limitations on how much music you could have on a vinyl disc. There was an extended release of Raiders done in 1995, and everybody thought, well, Temple of Doom's going to have to follow. But that would take another 13 years before a 5-CD box set of Indiana Jones music would be released. That would include the Temple of Doom soundtrack. So this music was provided by John Williams. Williams was born in 1932. As I have mentioned many times, he's probably the most important person in film music ever at this point. Certainly the most important from the late 20th century. And he is most known for his work with Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. He has won 5 Academy Awards, 26 Grammy Awards, 7 BAFTA Awards, 3 Emmys, 4 Golden Globes, 54 Academy Award nominations, the second most nominated person in history after Walt Disney. And he has another milestone. He is the oldest Oscar nominee in any category at the age of 91 years old. Just an amazing legend. The film was released on May 23rd, 1984 in the United States and would make $45.7 million in its first week. Some of that was my money. The film would go on to gross $331.1 million worldwide, with $180 million in North America and $153.1 million in the rest of the world. It was the highest grossing film of 1984 and had the highest opening weekend. Not the highest in North America, though. It would come in third behind Beverly Hills Cop and Ghostbusters. At its time, it was the 10th highest grossing film of all time. It was estimated they sold over 53.5 million tickets in the United States alone. It got mixed reviews from critics, though. In aggregator sites nowadays, it's positive, although a lot of people point out that the film might be too dark for young people. Still, a lot will say that it moves quickly. Roger Ebert gave the film 4 stars, calling it one of the greatest bruised forearm movies ever made. You know what a bruised forearm movie is? That's the kind of movie when your date is always grabbing your forearm in a vice-like grip as unbearable excitement unfolds on the screen. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom makes no apologies for being exactly what it is. Exhilarating, manic, wildly imaginative escapism. No apologies are necessary. When I was a kid, that is exactly how I saw it. No apologies, exhilarating, and wildly imaginative. It has silly moments, but overall it is just there to entertain. The cast and people who directed it have had some things to say about the film over the years. Kate Capshaw caught a lot of criticism for her character. Capshaw, who knew what the character was about, said she was still surprised by people's reaction to the film being so negative. She said, "The thing that surprised me the most was that the critics, women critics in particular, were very critical of Willie Scott, as if we were making a political statement and I was doing nothing for my sisters. I found it odd that it was an action-adventure film and we were meant to be doing message work." I think people are too harsh on Willie Scott and forget that that is how the character was written and that it is from a long line of characters just like that in film. It might not be Marion Ravenwood, but it's appropriate to the genre, especially at the time. Steven Spielberg, years later, would say that he finds Temple of Doom to be way too dark. He said it out-poltered Poltergeist. He further said in the Making of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom documentary, Temple of Doom is my least favorite of the trilogy. I look back and I say, well, the greatest thing I got out of that was I met Kate Capshaw. We married years later, and that to me was the reason I was fated to make Temple of Doom. Lucas, though, on the other hand, said, I love the movie. It's just slightly darker in tone and not as fun as the first. I think that, just like Roger Ebert's review, is accurate. The film would win an Academy Award for Best Visual Effects at the 57th Academy Awards. John Williams was nominated for Best Score, sadly didn't win. Now, the film would get a lot of promotion. One of my favorites was these glasses that they had at Brown's Chicken that I wouldn't get until much later because we didn't have one in our area. But they had this great 7-Up game that they ran at supermarkets where you would bring in a game piece you found in a newspaper. And if it matched, you could win prizes. Most people just won a coupon and a poster. But it was great to see 7-Up and Temple of Doom being matched up. And they ran commercials that sounded like this.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. The movie, the adventure, the 7-Up game. Share the adventure and discover $25 million in prizes and coupons playing the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom game. Brought to you by 7-Up. This is more than a game.
This is serious!
Play now and bring the adventure home.
Look for the 7-Up display at your local supermarket and play the Indiana Jones $25 million game.
So I printed out the paper from the day the film was released in my area, my local paper, to see what else was playing. We still had the 4-plex theater in my area and the 6-plex, although Indiana Jones was playing at the 6-plex. So at the 4-plex, we had Police Academy, Firestarter, Spinal Tap, and Breakin'. I saw all four of those films at the 4-plex. At the 6-plex, they had Indiana Jones in 70mm Dolby Stereo, a second showing that was running that was not in 70mm, according to what they're saying here, The Natural, 16 Candles, Moscow on the Hudson, and Making the Grade. I saw 16 Candles, of course, and my family went and saw Moscow on the Hudson for some reason. Can't remember why they had wanted to see it, but we did. Looking at advertising in the paper at the time, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom has the largest advertising by far of all of the little advertising. Nothing even seems to come close. So let's look at what my local movie critic, Lou Luminick, has to say about Temple of Doom. It's a very different type of review than he normally does. He does it as a Q&A. And he does a callback to his Raiders of the Lost Ark review from 1981. And he says that he had to spend the summer of 81 defending his less than enthusiastic review of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So he's doing a 20 questions about Temple of Doom. And he said he liked Temple of Doom more than Raiders. He liked the technical virtuosity that went into the making of it. And he liked Harrison Ford's performance, although he would say that he didn't particularly enjoy the film. And that follows up with his next question is, it's better than Raiders, but you didn't like it very much. Is something wrong with you? And he tries to explain himself, saying he likes a lot of the things in these films, especially how they're made, but he finds them just too fast-paced, that it leaves no time to react to the peril in the film, which when he breaks it down like that is valid, although he's wrong. He also doesn't like that these films are an homage to old movie serials because he thinks those are too simple and they're a waste of these very talented people's time and effort, especially Steven Spielberg. He points out something I really thought, which was that there's this riot in Steven Spielberg's film 1941 that's set to a dance number, this big swing number. And I find the frantic energy in that scene very reminiscent to the opening Kate Capshaw Anything Goes scene in this film. And what's even better in this Q&A is he states how he reviews films, something I've talked about before. They ask, are you recommending this movie or what? He says, I don't like to tell people whether to see a movie or not. I like to think I provide enough information so you can make up your own mind. And when pushed on this, he says, I might not ever see this again. And if you were to ask me what you should go see, he'd rather re-see Romancing the Stone, which came out around the same time. So a fun review from Lou. I love this format. Made me laugh while I was reading it. What else we got in the paper going on? Ooh, Sabrette, the hot dog maker, is having a Memorial Weekend special. 60 pushcart franks, 60 frankfurter rolls, 1 pound pushcart onions, 2 pounds sauerkraut, 10 ounces hot chili, 10 ounces mustard, $21.95 at the Sabrette outlet. I'm there. There's a offer for the brand new Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal, which you can get for free, plus $6 in cash and coupons when you send in this offer. There's a Memorial Day sale at A&P, a lot of good deals on soda. 2 liter of 7-Up, 99 cents. 2 liter of Pepsi, 79 cents. John's Cheese Pizza, 79 cents for a 10-ounce package. At ShopRite, which is where my family shopped, there was a big photo processing sale for their Memorial Day savings. You can get a Kodak Disc 3000 for $29.99, and film is reasonably priced. It's amazing that they had a whole sale around film and a giant whole-page ad for something we hardly use anymore. Pathmark was selling Schickhouse Meats. Oh, here's something. Polliner's Garlic Bread Spread. I think my friend's family used to get this all the time. A garlic bread spread. In each tub, there's 25 cloves of real chopped garlic. You don't want to chop your own garlic. Put it in the butter. A coupon for Pringles. A coupon for Pour a Quiche from Lando Lakes, which is liquid egg product. A great container. I remember these. Breyers is on sale. Save a dollar on Hawaiian Punch drink mix. Oh, an ad for Land of Make-Believe in Hope, New Jersey. A little child's park. I went there when I was really little. So if you went to the movies that afternoon, came home to watch TV, on CBS at 8 o'clock was Domestic Life, and then at 8:30, the movie Every Which Way But Loose was on. If you're a fan of fisticuffs and orangutans, that's where you're watching. On NBC is College Bowl. At 9 o'clock is Facts of Life. I would be watching that probably. Followed by Double Trouble at 9:30. And then at 10 o'clock, St. Elsewhere. On ABC, you got The Fall Guy until 9 o'clock, and then the movie Love Thy Neighbor. On local TV, nothing all that exciting going on. On HBO, they are showing the movie King of Comedy, which would be pretty good to watch. But I probably am watching Every Which Way But Loose, then jumping to Facts of Life, and then back to Every Which Way But Loose. The entire time just thinking about Temple of Doom. So that's what we had in the paper. That's good stuff.
Sunday.
You can get killed chasing after your fortune and glory.
Harrison Ford in the network television premiere. Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, Sunday.
The film was released on home video in Christmas of 1986 with a retail price of $29.95. It would sell 1.4 million units, a mega hit on home video. Years later, I worked in a video rental store, and every weekend, any copy we had of Raiders and Temple of Doom would be taken out. And then when I worked at Suncoast, we would always be selling to someone a indie film. A DVD version of the film was released in 2003, along with the other two films in the trilogy, and then a Blu-ray got its release in 2012 as part of another box set, which was then four films at the time. In 2021, it would get a 4K version and a release on Ultra HD Blu-ray, which had scans from the original negatives of the film. There would be a novelization of the movie and a comic adaptation of the film as a 3-issue limited series. Most notably, which I'll talk about in another episode, there would be a arcade game that was pretty amazing, released by Atari Games, that promoted the film. While the film had mixed reviews in the United States, in India, they were not happy with this film. They wanted some changes done. They didn't like how they were portrayed in the film. There was even small protests in the United States, although not many of them. They didn't like the way that Indians were being portrayed, and they had a lot of valid criticisms. But it didn't really have much of an impact, and even at the time, people who were in the film attempted to defend it, even the people who were from India. A lot of them viewed the film as fantastical, saying they looked at something from history and then amplified it, adding lots of silly fantasy elements. This would cause the film to never be shown on TV channels in India, and this criticism of the film would continue to grow to the point where it's represented in a lot of more modern reviews of the film, which prevents a lot of people from seeing it, which I think is a shame because the film is not perfect. It's no Raiders of the Lost Ark, and the criticisms of it from a lot of viewpoints are valid, but that does not dismiss the fact that it is a fun film to watch overall. The energy in it, the solid acting amongst the main characters, the sets, the special effects are great. This often gets called the Temple of Zoom for a reason. The film just moves along at such a pace, it's hard to keep up. And of course, you could compare it to the other films in the trilogy and think, wow, it's way too dark. But that was the intent of the creators of the film. And while Spielberg might not be happy with that, Lucas seems to understand the place this film has. It's as if they watched a lot of the films from the era that they're borrowing from, films like Gunga Din and other fantasy adventure films, and then took some horror elements and added them in. They mixed it up and they made a very fun film. If you haven't seen Temple of Doom in a while, I suggest suggest you check it out again. If you've never seen it at all, you should really watch it. And while I think Raiders is the better film, I think Temple of Doom is the second most interesting of the films that were made. And for that alone, it's worth watching. To me, it'll always have a special place as a film that, for better or worse, is a sort of milestone in my road to adulthood. Thanks for listening to the show. For more retro fun, you can drop by the website at retroist.com. You can follow me on social media. I'm at most of the major social media services at Retroist. The music you hear on the show is by Peachy. If you like what you hear, you should follow Peachy on Twitter and Twitch. He's at PeachyPixel8. That's the word Peachy, the word pixel, and the number 8. If you'd like more information from Lou Luminick, my favorite childhood reviewer, you should follow Lou Luminick on Twitter. He's at Lou Luminick, goes by the handle Trapped by Television. Every day, Lou is posting old information about television and is a lot of fun to follow. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by giving it a 5-star review wherever you download the show. It is really only those 5-star reviews that help people find the show nowadays, so if you take the time to do so, I really would appreciate it. If you'd like to support the show further, The Retroist is on Patreon at patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, and access to the Retroist Discord, the greatest retro community on the internet. This is part 2 in a multi-part series about Indiana Jones. I hope you're enjoying it and you keep stopping by to listen to the entire series. Thanks for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great weekend. Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.